And we welcome in the bench coach of the San Francisco Giants. It's Sunday morning. The professor, Ron Wotus, how are you?
I'm well, Marty, and I'm happy to hear that the weather will be a little nicer today than it was yesterday. That was the hottest day that I've ever spent. I don't know what your meteorologist had said, but on the field, it was absolutely the hottest day I've ever been in the dugout here at this ballpark.
Yeah, you know, it was for sure. And I went to the studio in about the third inning yesterday, and you know, that was my effort to get out of the heat, and I'm glad I did that. But for the fans who stayed, a lot of them went under the overhang, you know, just to cool off. And you played in Hawaii. You know, you've been through the summers in St. Louis and places like that. This was hotter than those kind of places?
Well, it was right up there with St. Louis on the turf in the middle of the summer. You know, Hawaii, it was cooler. You'd get those puka showers, you know. You'd get the clouds would come and go. But this, this had just that bearing heat in the sun, felt even humid, you know, that you would just, if you put sunscreen on, you would just sit there and sweat on the bench moving around. So yeah, it was right up there. And you, to your point, you go to the Midwest and you have the humidity. You go to the deep South, Atlanta, when you have those real smokers. Yeah. And it felt the same. That's how hot it was here in San Francisco.
Yeah, well, it ended well, and Hundley took it the other way, and that's his second one to the right side. It's funny. I mean, there are going to be like 85 players this year that have 20 home runs or more. There's no, you know, I went through this yesterday. I mean, how much more do you have to see?
Right.
To understand that maybe something is going on with the baseball here, something with the launch angles. I don't know what it is, but something is different. And this is our professor. I used it for climate change yesterday. I said, how much more do you have to see?
Right.
You got three storms and one of every 500 years, they three in a row. You got the ice sheet breaking off in Antarctica. You've got the worst hurricanes that we ever see, but we don't say a word about it. But baseball, you got 85 people hitting 20 home runs and everyone goes nuts. It's got to be something wrong.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Marty. There's no question to me that something's going on with the baseball, and it may not be by design, but it may just happen in production because, you know, the stats speak for themselves. Now, yesterday, you mentioned Nick's home run and how few times it happens here at this ballpark. It was kind of fun. I mean, I think the guys enjoyed, they didn't enjoy the heat, but they enjoyed the park playing more normal where the ball was carrying. You know, in that heat and without the wind and the cold, the ball was going a lot further. So I think Nick even alluded to that. I caught a little of his post game about, you know, hitting that home run and having the ball carry here a little bit. So, yeah, something's going on. I'm with you.
Yeah, come on. How much more do we have to see? Come on. 85 guys are going to 20 home runs or more. I mean, you know, that's it for me. That's enough for me.
Sure.
what else do you need? All right. Houston, the devastation down there, and of course you've been in Houston many times. I've been there myself. I had family that years ago lived in Houston. But it reminded me of how baseball heals things. And of course the Astros had a doubleheader there yesterday. They had 30,000 the first game and a split doubleheader, 35,000 the second one. And the speeches that went on, it reminded me of 9/11 a little bit. So I thought maybe you could, you know, connect what baseball does when we have these tragedies in the country.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing about it is you bring that up. When 9/11 hit, we were actually in Houston.
Oh, right.
Our team was, and I remember waking up and I got a call from my wife, and she said, turn on the TV, and sure enough, I turned it on, and there it was. And then we proceeded to sit in Houston for 3 days, not play a game, and not know how we were going to get home. We were going to possibly bus home. You know, the airports weren't open. Eventually, I think on the third day, we were one of the first teams to fly out of Houston. We didn't play that series. And it was very surreal because the airports were grounded, and there was nobody around. It was like a ghost town. But we were happy to be able to fly so we didn't have to bus back home from Houston. But it is a great thing to see. What Major League Baseball has done with that tragedy back in the day, and it's carried forward with the God Bless America in the seventh inning, right? They kept that alive, and now what they're going to do for these flood victims in Houston and in that surrounding area, I think it's great. I think it's great. I didn't get to see the speeches and get to feel all that. But it's the right thing to do, and a lot of people step up to the plate, ball players and organizations, and I'm happy to see it.
Yeah, isn't it funny how baseball always is the one thing, and you even use the expression step up to the plate. How baseball is so ingrained. You know, I love this stuff, you know, the history of baseball in United States history. But even the words that we talk of curing the ills of society, we use baseball terms.
Yeah, well, you know, being a historian that you are and having all this knowledge of the connections with baseball and these things, it has always been a place to escape to, right?
Yeah.
It's, you know, the long season in the summer, and no matter what's going on in the country, around the world, people have been able to escape to the ball field. And the game goes on. You say it. It's every day. It continues on. It's a beautiful game. And it is a distraction. It's entertainment and a distraction, and people love it for all these tougher things that are happening around our country and the world.
No, it's happened for 140 years. Baseball's always been there for these things. So glad to bring that up and glad to talk to you about it. The bench coach is here. We'll do a little schooling right now. Yesterday, Mike Matheny, and I said it on the air, and you don't have to say much about this, but the way the guy handles the bullpen against the Giants, there's always something that goes on. I don't care what playoff it is, what series it is. There's something about Mike Matheny and his bullpen against the Giants that doesn't work. So my question is this. He didn't put Posey. First, he took Lynn out, you know, after a one-hitter, which thank goodness for that. But, all right, I can understand that. If you have the dominant closer, you bring him in. But if you don't have the dominant closer and you got to piece it together for a ninth inning, you're asking for trouble. So that's the first thing he did. But the other thing he did was he could have put Posey on base. And, of course, the bunt is laid down by Panic, and you get Pence over to second. Here's Posey. And he's got lefties coming up after Posey, so he doesn't have to take Lyons out. He could have left him in there as his major lefty to get Crawford and Sandoval if you allowed him to hit, turned him around. But my question is this. He could have put Posey on base, but that would have been putting the winning run on base. And one of those cardinal sins, no pun intended, don't put the winning run on base. But I wonder how many times a manager puts a winning run on base that the winning run actually scores, because I think it messed up his whole inning.
Well, it caused a lot of other changes. There's no doubt about it. That's one option he has available, opposed to making the pitching changes, et cetera, et cetera. Right. You know, it is one of those rules that's tough to do. I think most managers, looking at all their options available to them, the last option is really putting the winning run on base, except exceptions. One, if you're on the road, you know, I would never do it at home or not want to do it at home. I would be more likely to do it on the road because, you know, you're playing to win the game. You know, at home, you if you play for the, you know, you tie the game, you got extra innings, you got the last set. But on the road, you know, you're trying to win the game, do everything you can. You don't always play no doubles in certain situations, so you play a little bit different. So that's one scenario you can do it. And plus, you know, who's hitting behind, like you said, and how hot that player is that you're putting on base. My goodness, you know, if we're facing Stanton and it's a two-run game and, you know, you want to pitch to him or do you want to put that winning run on base? Well, he's more dangerous as the winning run standing at home plate than he is standing at first base. So you have to look at all those options available.
Yeah, I wouldn't have pitched to Posey. And Posey's the one guy. I mean, the one. Now, Crawford's hot, but you have a lefty-lefty matchup, and he's had trouble from the left side with runners in scoring position. But, you know, Posey is the one guy. If you say, all right, who's the one guy I don't want to bloop one in, the magic wandu, whatever Kipe says, that's the guy. And that's the guy he could have put on. So, yeah. I don't know, as part of, you know, part of baseball.
That's what makes it so great, doesn't it? And, you know, I think to your point, it probably entered into his head a little bit. It's just not who's the one guy. It mostly is. Who's the one guy that you don't want to beat you with his reputation? You know, Buster could be ice cold,
right,
and you're still, as a manager, going to know where he's at in the lineup and not let him beat you. But Crawford has been swinging the bat extremely well, and maybe that entered his decision as well. Who knows?
Right. Well, we love it. That's why the bench coach is here. The professor pulls it apart. CC Sabathia got in the news, and the big guy from Vallejo, and he was very upset. And Nunez, our, you know, who we know quite well, CeCe's got, you know, knee injuries and all this. He's got a big brace on his leg. And the beginning of the game, Nunez bunted on him, and CeCe just went ballistics of how could he do that? How about that?
That is just ludicrous to me. I can't believe that he had the things to say about the bunt. You want the guy not to try to win the game or get on base? I mean, that's what you do as a ball player. You're trying to attack the other team's weakness, right? If a guy's slow to the plate, you're going to run on him. If the guy can't feel his position, you're going to bunt on him. Really surprised by that. I wonder if there's some sort of history when Nunez came up with the Yankees. I'm not sure if they were teammates, if he was there at that point in time. I'm wondering if there's some sort of history between those two guys, because I've never seen a reaction like that on a bunt unless it was breaking up a no-hitter in the seventh, eighth, or ninth inning.
Yeah, I mean, unless Satchel Paige was pitching at age 65. And, you know, and Yastrzemski, that happened. Satchel Paige pitched an inning, age 65, against the Boston Red Sox. And they said, don't bunt on the guy. Don't bunt on him. And he was 65 years old. It was in the early 60s. And Yastrzemski got the only hit off him.
Really?
Got a single. But
and nobody bunted.
Nobody bunted.
Yeah,
nobody
well, if bunted. Nunez was there, he probably would have bunted.
Very good. Funny part of baseball. We had another part that I found interesting yesterday was the contact play with Bader. Now, this is a young kid. You know, they take out Fowler, who hurt himself going into third, so he's gone. Bader comes in, and Dyson is pitching. And Dyson did a Houdini job, obviously, of getting out of that inning. But Bader went on the one out, ground ball, a sharp ground ball to Sandoval. And he went, and Sandoval had him by 10, 12 feet at the plate. That is the contact play. So my question to you is, when it's a contact play and the ball's hit sharply to your left and you see it or you feel it, do you still have to go?
Well, yeah, the contact play, you're going on any contact down, and you're fighting to get the biggest possible lead you can, and your anticipation on the swing is you're almost taking a step forward. If you watch these runners at third, when that guy's swinging, he's almost taking a jab step home, anticipating that ball down to go. I mean, you're fighting for every inch you can. You're vulnerable at two things. You're vulnerable on a line drive because you're not getting back to third. If he hits a line drive somewhere, you're doubled up. And the other thing you're vulnerable on is if the ball's hit right at the fielder, most of the time you're not going to make it. Now, the other option you have is not to run the contact play, is to read the ball through, you know, watch it, you know, if it's a high chopper or it's a squibber, you can try to score. But, you know, there's a lot of balls you can score on that are not little squibbers. If that ball's hit, say, three steps to the shortstop's left and it's hit at an average speed and you get a good jump at third base, by the time that shortstop moves three steps, comes up and throws home, it's going to be a bang-bang play, and Bader has a lot of speed. So that's the risk you take. It's a gamble play. You're rolling the dice, and I've seen it work a lot. I remember for years, whether it's games I've been involved in, running the contact play, I think we've scored just as much as if we didn't go on contact, and the reason being the pressure that speed puts on you. I don't know how many times I've seen a guy going on contact, and the guy's coming home, he's going to be out, and it throws high. They make a high throw, and he just gets underneath the slide. If you stop all the time, I've seen guys stop to get in a rundown, and the throw is made, and he would have scored. He would have scored because if he kept going, he would have got under the tag. So it's a risky, it's a gamble play.
I love it. I thought, you know, my uneducated way, I said, boy, if the ball's hit that hard at third base, you know, try to read it, but I guess, you know, it's just one of those instinct plays.
It's one of those plays, and the other side is it, you know, and a lot of people listening that know the game, sometimes you do stop. You know, different scenarios, you know, first and third, and you're dead at home play, you're going to stop getting a run down, try to get those runners to move up. Now, I've seen people stop on the contact play. I will say this. You don't want to make a habit of stopping, but if it's a bullet right at the guy and you're halfway home and the catcher's standing there with the ball, don't slide into him. Yeah, then you stop. But the point is, if you tell your player to stop, I've seen guys stop if they just kept going, the throw was a little bit up the line or a little bit to the left, and they would have scored. So I like to play. You go for it. You had the speed. You had the speed there. It's a huge run. Are you going to wait for a two-out base hit, or are you going to try to force the issue?
No, I got it. No, yeah. I agree. It was just one of those, when it happened, I said, wow.
Always looks bad when it doesn't work, because a guy's out by 10 feet, and you're going, what are you doing, right?
That's why I got a talk show. That's why.
There you go.
All right, but it's a good segue into Nick Hundley and his base running the other day. He was on second, and the ball was hit back to the box to Travis Wood. And Wood was the pitcher for the Padres and speared it. And Hundley was off the bag quite a bit and was hung up. And Wood, you know, I always, you know, in my own limited way, if I was play ball, softball, whatever, I ran right at the guy. And I didn't give it up until the guy was committed to go back. And Wood ran at Hundley, and I said, well, here he goes. And then he gave it up, and Hundley was great. He took off for third and stayed in the rundown long enough for Crawford to get to second.
Yeah, Nick did a nice job staying in the rundown, and he even felt confident enough he could stay in it, where he waved his arm to Craw to say, hey, keep going, keep going. And that's
like
what you want to do.
Jackie Robinson.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what you want to do in that situation when you're hung up. You know, you're trying to get to third base. Sometimes that ball is a bullet back to the pitcher. You did get hung up at second. Sometimes it's unavoidable. If you're busting hard to get a good secondary lead and you're trying to score and that pitcher snares the ball, you're in no man's land. So Nick did a nice job there staying in the rundown to advance. And that's one play we work at on in spring training all the time, because it comes up very often, and the pitchers have to be adept on how to handle that and try to keep that batter runner from getting the second. So that's usually in the spring. We'll bring the rabbits over from the minor league camp. Poor guys come over, they stretch their legs out, and they sit there and they run the bases for 15 minutes. We put one at second, one at home, and then we run the play and try to do it at game speed.
Now, the pitcher, Wood, and he gave it up, I thought, maybe a little bit early. And if that was Samardzija, he would have tagged him. He would have gone, he never would have let him get out of the box, so to speak.
Right.
But Wood gave it up. Did he give it up too early?
Well, with a batter runner running, we want the pitcher to give the ball up and get out of the play. So as soon as the runner is committed either to second or third, you know, every play develops differently. If it doesn't have to necessarily be committed back to second, but the pitcher, if he's in the middle, we'll take an angle going back to second. And as soon as he turns his back or gets committed where he can't get out of that rundown, we want the pitcher giving up the ball, because if he keeps running at him and going slower and taking his time, the batter runner is running the whole time. So as soon as the pitcher can give up the ball, either to the third baseman or shortstop or second baseman, whoever is there on that play, we want him to give it up and let the infielders execute the rundown, which they do all the time.
Isn't it funny? It's September. Labor Day is tomorrow. We've got 24 games left in the season. And we're still talking fundamentals. Isn't that funny? And no one works harder than you guys in spring training. But here we're still talking fundamentals on Labor Day.
Well, it happens, you know, there's a lot of games. It happens every day. That's why you try to have some sort of foundation when you hit, when you field, or on these team defensive plays, because they come up. That's why you work on them. And the good teams that don't beat themselves, give extra outs, can execute these plays, have a better chance to win. I mean, especially when you're playing one run games. So it never stops, you know. I mean, everybody loves to hit and they love to take your ground balls, but there's so much more to the game, the base running, the fundamentals, the cutoffs and relays, and they affect the baseball game.
Yeah, it changes the game.
Yeah.
You know, and then even 138 games in, you see a play like that is going to change the game. All right, we'll take a break. The professor is with us. There we are on a Sunday morning here. Professor is with us. You're going into Colorado, and DJ LeMahieu, all of a sudden they're shifting him in a crazy way. And I say crazy, sort of a radical way. I want to get your thoughts about it, and we'll explain it when we come back right after this. All right, let's talk a little baseball here. You're going into Colorado. DJ LeMahieu, now he is a right-handed hitter, correct?
Yes.
Right-handed hitter, and he traditionally hits the ball the other way.
Correct.
All right, so what Arizona did, this is, again, remember Joe Maddon? We talked about the four outfielder thing. So every time LeMahieu came up to the plate, Arizona put the left fielder in center, the center fielder in right center, and the right fielder close to the line. No one in left field. Lamb and Marte played their normal third and short, and they got him. You know, and he hit the ball into the shift just about every time, and they got away with it. So Would you try something like that? I mean, it's a little more radical, but is this where we're going with the shifts? I mean, we had Madden with the four outfielders, and we've got Socha with the five infielders. He'll do that.
Right.
Where could this go?
Well, I think, at times you're going to see scenarios like this, and it's not with every hitter per se, but when the information you're looking at is overwhelming that this guy doesn't hit the ball to left field, you can make the argument, why do you want to keep the guy in left field? Now, you may want to keep him in left field if you're going to throw him a bunch of slow curveballs or a pitch that he can pull. But if you're going to stay hard away or throw pitches that he typically doesn't pull, and you're together with how you're pitching, and this is where the percentages are, I think it's a logical, it's really a logical move. It looks, you know, irresponsible or out of line, but it's a logical move, and that's really the key, that the pitcher and how you're going to pitch him and the defense are coordinated. So
would you feel comfortable doing that? I mean, you're in charge of the shift.
Yes. I look at that. I probably look at that as much as, well, I look at it more than anybody on the club. I mean, yeah. I've been looking at it for a lot of years, too. And so you get to see how these spray charts bear out. It's just not doing it 1 year. I mean, I've been doing it, I don't know, 15 years or so. And it's usually right. And you could tell by a guy's swing. We actually had a discussion with LeMahieu earlier in the year. You know, he kills us with a man on first. He hits the ball to the right side, as Arizona sees as well. Well, you know, we discussed putting the third baseman between first and second, because you have one second baseman there. The first baseman's holding the guy on, and his spray chart just wears out the second base side. And there's not many balls to third. So you can't do it, obviously, early in the count, because he could drop a bunt down and get on base. We can't do that in the outfield, right? So they do that. But with two strikes, if you're going to finish him a particular way and you're not going to give him a pitch to pull, you can take the third baseman, stick him over there, and you have a reverse shift. And he's a guy, honestly, the charts would say that you could do that with.
Well, I think it's great. You know, you go to Colorado for three here, and Colorado is teetering, believe me. They're basically hanging on, and Milwaukee's coming after them, and St. Louis is still very much in the race, and Arizona's pulling away. So I think it would be interesting. You know, and again, you want to win a game. You know, your job every day is to win a game, and if that can help you win a game, I would go for it.
Well, you know, there's a lot of things to consider. The pitcher, you know, the option of the pitch he wants to throw. You know, you really have to know how you want to finish the hitter. And, you know, what pitcher's throwing? Is it a lefty? Is he throwing a cutter in? Well, he will pull that ball to third. You know, is it righty that's going to keep the ball, you know, sliders are hard away? Then it's more logical. So it's things to consider, and it is extreme in today's game. But
we're going there.
Well, the shifts already have shown that people are playing the percentages, and sometimes you get burned by that. But I think the data shows that over the long haul, you know, they're taking hits away from players.
Yeah, I'd like to see it. I have no problem with it. I think Clint Hurdle did it a lot with Pittsburgh. We're seeing it with Arizona, and you guys are getting into it a little bit more, and Joe Maddon goes nuts with it. He'll go nuts with anything. So I like it. All right. The other night, Crawford had the home run taken away. You're out there every game, bring the lineup card. You go over the ground rules. I mean, it's pretty clear. If the ball is on the green tin, it's a home run. There's no question about it. How did this thing spiral away from everybody?
Well, what I've gathered from the whole scenario and hearing what the umpires here had said and then watching the replay and myself, the only thing that must have happened is, you know, the guy in New York did not know the ground rule, and he had it stuck in his head that the back of that wall, the back of that green, was the home run. Now, the umpires on the field, to their credit, you know, when he first mentioned home run, they said, "Are you sure?" You know, I don't know the exact language they used, but they did question it, because what they saw in the moment was that ball, you know, landing on the tin. And, so they did ask him, but he said, "No, looks like he reached over." So in the replay booth in New York, obviously the gentleman, the umpire, did not know the ground rule, which is really unacceptable. You know, these guys on the field did everything they could. And I'll tell you this, when you're on the field and you think you see something, you think you're right. You got it right. You know, defending the umpires on the field. Then you go to the replay or you call up and ask them on TV and they say, oh, no, no, that ball was touched or that ball was foul. You go, okay, I must have saw it wrong. Yeah. You know, and that's what happens to the guy on the field. But the guys in New York, they're the authority. How could they not have the ground rules in front of them, or at least prepare enough to know the ground rules in this park if you're going to have to make a ruling on the field? The guys here shouldn't explain it to them, and they've all been to this ballpark.
Well, that's my point. They've all been umpires in this ballpark. It's not like you put them in there trying to figure something out in Salt Lake City.
Exactly.
I mean, come on.
And it's a very unique park, and it's a very unique right field, and I bet you if you ask most of the umpires, they know that green tin is a home run. So it was really inexcusable what happened, and I feel for Crawford. Hopefully he doesn't come up one shy for the home run record, because that would be a crying shame. But still, a home run and an RBI taken away from him is when it was not a judgment call, but a replay call. Not knowing the rule is really unacceptable.
All right, now that brings me to my next question. We talked about this last night, and I don't know if Carmen and Allie heard it on the way home or not, but why can't, now of course you have trial courts, and the umpires here are a trial court. You have the guys in New York, they're like an appellate court, okay? But then after that, there's a Supreme Court, all right? So my point is, Rob Manfred, who's in the news every day, Bruce Jenkins wrote like a 30,000-word column today about the computerized umpire. So he's in the news every day, Manfred. Why can't Manfred say, they missed it, it's not going to change the outcome of the game. I am the final arbiter on this kind of stuff. Crawford, you got a home run and you got an extra RBI, and the final score of the game is 5-3. Let's make it right.
Well, you argue a good point, Marty. he does have the authority to do that.
Why not? Who cares?
He can. You're going to open a big can of worms, but I don't know how many scenarios that are going to come up in the game. And if we have video replay, and in the spirit of umpiring in the game is to get it right.
Exactly.
But you might run into the problem where if a call is blown, say that was the go-ahead home run.
Well, then you protest it. Then the manager protests. Then it's a rule interpretation, and the manager can protest it.
So he has the ability to protest
right.
it, and then you could get the win on the protest.
Yeah, absolutely. Then the manager protested and said that changed the outcome of the game, but this one didn't. You know, it's going back to the George Brett. Remember when they took his bat away and he hit the home run that changed the game?
Right.
Well, they said, no, now you're out. But they had to replay it because they were wrong and it changed the game. This did not change the game, but this does something like, what if Crawford ends up with 399 home runs in his career or something like that?
Yeah, it's a great point because, you know, the spirit of umpiring, getting it right. I always liked, even before a replay, you know, one of my biggest concerns is when there was a call on the field that the umpire made that was, he missed it, flat out missed it. And there's three other umpires standing there. And, you know, you ask them to get together. Can you converge? Can we get this thing right? You know, everybody makes a mistake in judgment or in real time it happens. But you have four umpires. They'd get together. They'd discuss the play. And then they would reverse it. So that's the spirit of you know, being an umpire and getting the plays right on the field. And now with the replay, we should be able to get it right.
Absolutely. And you should be able to the guy who had the perfect game for Detroit. Right? Jim Joyce missed the call.
Oh, yeah, that's
a
tough one.
All right, the next day, sorry, you have a perfect game. In 30 years, no one will remember how it happened. Your name will be on the list. You deserve it. You have a perfect game. Let's make it right.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how the umpires, you'd have to ask Eddie about that. I mean, look, they're taking more and more away of their judgment and their decisions on the field, which, you know, when we didn't have these things, right? It's a game. It's a sport. There's a human element.
Yeah.
So it's a tough question, you know, but technology keeps progressing and we keep making these changes to get things right. So that's a heck of a question.
All right. You'll be my co-counsel on this one.
Okay.
I like it. All right. The last point on this, ejections. John Shea had that in the paper today. Bruce Bochy is a manager. Bobby Cox was a manager. He got ejected like 150 times, whatever it was. John McGraw, so many. These are records that will never be broken because the manager really never gets ejected anymore.
Yeah.
So how do I solve that? I think the manager should be able to come out, and like a red card or something like that, and a call like that, he should be able to beef after it goes the other way, even after the replay goes the other way. He should be able to get out, get on the headset, and say, "You guys are out of your mind. What did you do?"
That's great theater, Marty. You're bringing it to you're bringing it to a new level. I don't know if I would see him going to the headset and yelling at the guys in New York. That's pretty good. I've got that visual in my head right now with Boach going out there on the headset yelling at these guys. But there should be some recourse for the umpire. You know, and I think, you know, Boach probably alluded to that. There should be some sort of challenge to challenge the replay. You know, we still disagree with it. Because, you know, out of respect to the umpires on the field, they didn't make the call. You know, you don't want to be upset with them, but you're upset with the result. So, another good question. you got it going on today.
Come on, it's Sunday morning. And you're 40 games out. Come on, it's Sunday morning. Let's have fun with baseball. And you played a great game yesterday, and you got Bumgarner going today with Luke Weaver, then off to Colorado, and then to the White Sox after that.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got quite a week ahead of you. So it still should be fun, and it is at the ballpark. And that's why we talk. This is what people talk about.
Yeah, well, it's a great game. It would be nice if Bum can get us a split in this series today before we head to Colorado, where it's always tough, and they have a good club over there. So big game for us today, and looking forward to it.
Well, as Charlie Dressen used to say, right, Murph? Charlie Murph is here. You know this guy who's here?
Oh, yeah, I know this guy.
Mike
You're
Murphy.
In for a treat now with him coming on. Yeah, that's the great Mike Murphy.
All right, but as Charlie Dressen used to say, he said, just hold him for seven innings, and I'll think of something. Well, just hold them for about seven or eight innings today, and Mike Matheny will think of something. So don't worry. You don't have to comment on that, but that's what I say.
All right. Well, enjoyed it again, as always, Marty,
right, well.
And I'll let you get on with Mike here, and I'm going to get to work and see what we can do about winning this game.
All right. Well, thanks. Have a good trip. All right. That's Ron Wotus, the bench coach of the Giants on Sunday morning with the professor. More coming up right after this. Huh?
Just wait for
what's
the name?
Yeah, Ernie.
Yeah. I got to hit some number. Thank you.